Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
The Martinsville Melodrama. Reasons to pick for and against championship drivers in Phoenix. We look at the NHRA, the next-gen race car, and Eric Von Hessler even calls in with a special guest, too. This is Five to Go.
They arrested me and they put me in jail and called my pappy to throw my bail. He said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod
Lincoln. Championship edition of the Five to Go Racing Podcast, episode 155, playing for you right now ahead of a big weekend for all three of NASCAR's top three touring series at Phoenix Raceway. Doug Turnbull from the traffic team here at 95.5 WSB. I get to help out with the Performance Racing Network, who had an exciting slate of races this year. I love being up at the Charlotte Roval. That was some fun times. And I'm joined online here by several racing luminaries, if you will. Eric Von Hessler is going to join us a little bit later on. His Daily Von Hessler Doctrine that runs 9 to noon every day, and then they also do a podcast bonus, if you will, or podcast 30 afterwards, and the whole package available in all the podcasting places. He is going to join us as soon as that wraps up, but we had to go ahead and get recording because we had to pull Dan Elliott, the master maker of things going fast at Dawsonville, out of the shop to join us on the call. How you doing, Dan?
Doing great. Hope everybody else is also.
And we certainly are. And we had to pull Devin Kupka, our stats wizard, who also lives up there in the North Georgia mountains, not far away from Dan, goes to university in North Georgia. And he's our stats guru and NASCAR super fan. We had to pull him out of class to join us today. How you doing, Dev?
Oh, I'm doing great. I just got done watching a great weekend of racing and can't wait to discuss about this upcoming weekend and the championship weekend and recap what happened this past weekend at Martinsville.
Well, that's exactly it. We can't go forward, guys, until we look back just a little bit, because what we saw unfold, whether it was a mediocre kind of average little race unfolding there for about 2/3 of it, and then you get to about 50, 75 laps to go, and as is normal, all hell breaks loose. So, boys, I want to go to you, Dan, first. Is there anything you saw at Martinsville, Dan? I think I might know the answer to this, but is there anything you saw in Martinsville that tees you up for how you view the Championship Four and anybody else at Phoenix Raceway for the Cup Series?
Everything. I loved everything about it.
Let's hear it.
Like some of the fans that were online that were talking about how they enjoyed the race and how they wish that every Martinsville would be included in the countdown races, and I agree, this is the kind of racing that I wanted to see back at Martinsville, that I feel like in some ways we've seen glimpses of, but I feel like this Martinsville was a little bit better, because I feel like maybe the competition was, it seemed like everybody was hungry. The competition was there. The cars were there. Don't know if anyone had anything for the Hendrick camp this weekend, but they doggone sure tried.
So they sure did. And the Gibbs camp, very strong. I mean, Denny Hamlin looks like he has the race won there. Alex Bowman inserted himself in the top five for a large stretch of that race, and then he got there toward the end and, you know, different restarts, whatnot, and suddenly Bowman is fighting hard with Hamlin and gets up under him there, and the car does not stick on the bottom of the racetrack. So, Devin, what did you glean from Sunday's Martinsville race that you take forward and how you look at Phoenix, and what do you pick out of it, maybe your top takeaway or two?
Well, my top takeaway is just the momentum that Hendrick Motorsports is on right now, as they've won the last four races dating back all the way to the Roval that me and you were both at.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, just Hendrick's absolute dominance. I don't know how how Joe Gibbs is going to react to this going into next week, especially, you know, with the tempers flaring at the end of the race between Denny Hamlin and Alex Bowman. It's definitely going to be an exciting championship weekend next weekend. between the Joe Gibbs drivers and the Hendricks drivers.
Yeah, coming up right around the bend, just in a few days there. Gibbs versus Hendrick is probably fitting, guys, that it comes down to these two organizations just because of what they've exerted this year, and not just with wins, but with overall how they've run, and especially Hamlin and Truex, especially Elliott and Larson, and then you mix in the fact that Alex Bowman, Dan Elliott, when you were doing your preseason bingo card, did you have Alex Bowman doubling Chase Elliott's win total this year? Because wasn't the narrative coming into the season that Elliott was going to win like six or seven races because of all the road courses added? I mean, Dan, Alex Bowman, he may not have run as well as his teammates overall, but he's got four wins. What do you think?
He's got four wins, but you've got to have consistency, and that's what both of those other cars are doing, is they're gathering up consistency to where I feel like next year, if they can carry this momentum on, that next year for that camp could even be better, but we have to factor in the new car. And I figure as good a drivers, I believe as good a drivers as those kids are, and they're all kids to me. So I look at that.
Denny Hamlin.
I look at that completely different. As far as the older veterans, the seasoned veterans, as being able to transition, and that's what I'm meaning by it, is the transition into the new car and adapting to it. And I know in years past, that has been an issue with a lot of drivers, is that transition. And I feel like the younger drivers may transition quicker. That's what I saw in the past. That's what I base it on. And then I look at what happened on Sunday was the fact that you had a non-member driver of the life for affecting one of the players for the playoffs. You know, you've got so many variables in this by having four playoff drivers and the rest of the field not. And do you feel like we could get into a deal to where that Phoenix will be decided by points?
Yeah, well, just by how you finish. I mean, let's not even worry about the points, right? Could Phoenix be decided with third, sixth, seventh, and eighth, right, or something like that? It seems to me, guys, very unlikely. Of course, anything's possible, and there are a lot of hungry drivers out there. You know that Brad Keselowski would love to win in his last race of the two car. He almost did it at Martinsville, and that was one of the sneaky performances I saw out of there. Is Brad just put that car on his shoulders and said, to hell with everybody, and went for it out there, and he had to win to make it, and he almost did. You could see a hungry Brad Keselowski. You could see, Tyler Reddick has come so close to winning his first race here in the playoffs, that at some point that door is going to fall down, and maybe he's up there on a final restart. He stays out or chooses the non-preferred line and just wings it and throws it into a corner and comes out on top. Tyler Reddick could do that. William Byron has had such a fast car and just had very little in the win column to show for that. Well, nothing since he's really gained all that speed. William Byron, could he do it? There's several people you could ask that question, and they should race as hard as possible. Just don't be, right, Devin, don't be that guy. Don't be that guy that stays out. If you remember how Daniel Suarez won the 2016 Xfinity title, it's because Cole Witt and the TriStar Motorsports number 14 stayed out on old tires and just caused a crap show of a restart. Knowing they probably weren't going to win, just to get the best finish possible, and it bottled up some guys, wrecked some others, and then Suarez shoots out in the lead, and he's the one that won the title. So, I mean, Devin, we were hoping that everybody races hard, but nobody's that guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be that guy and causing problems for playoff drivers, but you also got to realize that everybody out there on the track, whether it's playoff season or it's not playoff season, that everybody's out there fighting for the win. For instance, you could have Ross Chastain at the top, and let's just say it was Kyle Busch or Ross Chastain this weekend, and they were fighting for the lead. You know Ross Chastain wants that win, although I know Ross Chastain didn't perform, you know, well this weekend, but just thinking about it, and Alex Bowman, you know, if you have a chance to win, you go out and get that win. So, and I know Denny Hamlin's all upset about it, but just Alex, I mean, if you have a chance to win, go out and win. And it doesn't matter whether you're going to have to face off against a playoff driver and you're not in the playoffs. It might be a bad look, but if you have the chance, go out and win.
Just don't do something stupid that messes up the day. That's So a great example of Ross Chastain there. You know, Chip Ganassi Racing, Kurt Busch's last race there. Both of those drivers want to get one last big win for Big Chip, right? Ryan Newman's last race of the six car. He hasn't even been a lead lap driver or even one that's two laps down of late. I mean, he's been out to pasture. But if Ryan Newman somehow has a car under him and potentially his last race is a full-time driver, Matt DiBenedetto, no ride next year, he has a chance to go up there and win. Dadgummit, they better go out there and try to win. There's no taking it away. This is still a race, and I think sometimes we get lost so much in these playoffs that it's not remembered as that. Here are a couple of other things on the line, boys. The points, and I don't have the money numbers that break down for how much drivers and teams get when they finish a certain spot in the standings, but anybody that's not in the championship four is fighting for fifth place in the points. Brad Keselowski has fifth place in the points by only 5 points over Kevin Harvick right now, as far as they're lined up in the owner's point standings. The number two car has a 5-point advantage to finish fifth. The battle for 10th place is only 6 points, separating Kurt Busch in 11th from William Byron in 10th. That is another big pay level cut, or pay level cut line, if you will. And anything could happen, right? But just when you have such thin margins there. By the way, the 12 and the 22 car are exactly tied in the point. They're exactly tied in the point standings after being reset after getting kicked out of the playoffs. They are exactly tied in the points. Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, they want to finish as high as possible. And then, boys, this sexy battle is not going to make it on TV at all. There's a battle to finish 25th in the standings. There's a $1 million cutoff right here. And Daniel Suarez has a commanding lead. In fact, he's got that spot locked up over Cole Custer. All right. So, I mean, that I think barring a catastrophe, Daniel Suarez finishes in the 25th spot in the points versus Cole Custer in 26. And there's one last one is for the charters. And Devin and Dan, I know you've heard this before. If you have a charter, you're one of the 36 teams that has that privileged spot to be locked into races and the extra payout and all of that. You can't finish in the bottom three of the charters 3 years in a row, or else NASCAR can elect to take your charter from you. Rick Ware Racing in the number 51 charter, I believe, is in 34th in the standings. Is out of the charters, though, he's the 33rd, I think. And so the way that works, if they don't fudge it enough to where he ends up finishing in the bottom three, they could potentially take that charter away. And that's a charter that actually belongs to Richard Petty Motorsports. All right, got all that? So there's another battle that involves a lot of money on the line there, and the same thing exists in the other series as well, as far as finishing the top X in the points and the top and there are no charters in the other series. So that there's a lot on the line here, and we're really only going to talk about the four drivers in the end. So that's kind of how that breaks down. Now, boys, Dan, I want to come to you first. Driving etiquette. Look. Martinsville is a race where it is a just Goliath and David type of battle all day long. There is a point where respect and racecraft get trumped by entertainment and desperation, right? And do you think that line was crossed at all, Dan, in Sunday's race? Do you think that Alex Bowman, I mean, what if Denny Hamlin misses the playoff cut line because he gets bumped out of the lead there? I mean, do you think if Alex Bowman's move any less, Dan, or what do you do?
You know, if that had been a situation where Alex was on a new set of tires, he came off the pit road, and I know he wouldn't be leading. So let's just say that if something had been to where that his car was, maybe they were in sequence of stops, and he got a new set of tires, and he came out and did that with the differences in the two cars. Might be a little lack of respect on that deal, or the fact that you just get carried away. The fact that the car is running so good, but no, I did not see anything that really stood out to me over races I've seen in the past and the way situations over time present themselves. Because as these younger drivers do battle with the veteran drivers, there's going to be a season at which these look like they're at odds, but it really is. And I don't say this loosely or lightly, it's not a changing of the guards, but let's say that the younger drivers are definitely maturing to where that they now do battle, and it is a battle in which the outcome has really, really huge benefits by who is on top at the end of the day. So let's just put it in perspective. Do you want a driver that goes out there and is afraid to do battle with a seasoned veteran? I don't. They're not going to. This is not the way it is. This is just part of racing to me, and it's an evolution.
Well, yeah, it is an evolution for sure. And, you know, with so much on the line here, you can't fault people for going hard. I mean, Brad Keselowski went hard, man. Brad Keselowski went hard to try to race his way in. There was only one way in. Almost wrecked Kyle Busch coming to the start-finish line, which drew Kyle Busch to say not only did he want to beat the S out of Keselowski because trying to wreck him for second and not first, but he also used the R word in there, which has now sent him to sensitivity training class. It's definitely not a word that could be thrown around anymore, right? It's just not something you could say. So, I want to ask two guys, Devin, to you first, and I know both of us, all three of us, I mean, follow multiple sports. In baseball, when the winning team wins, they do grab a player or the manager on the side of the field. And same in football. Usually the losing team doesn't get talked to until there's a press conference afterwards and things have calmed down. And really, that's true in any sport, right? So, Devin, I want to ask you first. NASCAR, what makes it charming is that drivers, I mean, you pull them right out of that hot, sweaty race car, and they're going to a media bullpen or getting a camera stuck in their face. And sometimes things get said, and sometimes what Hamlin does, saying talentless hack and doing all this stuff, gets captured. So, Devin, do you think that we hold drivers to too high of a standard of how they speak? And I don't mean Kyle Busch using the R word. I mean some of the other stuff they say. Do you think we hold drivers to too high of a standard when we stick a camera in their face, a mic in their face, right after the heat of battle?
Well, I mean, yes and no. So if we're doing this right after the race, like we've been doing for a very long time, it's in the heat of the moment. And this past weekend's race at Martinsville, it was very fierce between those playoff drivers and, you know, kind of getting up in their face after the races. And this was seen in all three series this past weekend, drivers being aggravated after the race. I don't know how to put it, but you're basically asking for what you're going to get, kind of, is where you're going in right before they can cool down and think about everything. Because think about it. When after the race, when Alex Bowman was doing burnouts and Denny Hamlin was going after him, you heard the spotter or crew chief for Denny Hamlin telling him, think big picture, to try to calm him down. So you get what you bargain for when you do this after each race, like especially when things are intense and stuff. Drivers are just going to be in the moment, and they'll say stuff that they probably regret.
For sure, Dan, you at running Gresham Motorsports Park, I mean, it was the top three were standing right on the podium because you had to have post-race ceremonies for all the multiple series of classes that were racing there. And sometimes things got said. But, Dan, I always thought that when drivers misbehave, let's just say, when there's conflict, that sells tickets, right? That promotes or that brings engagement. So, I mean, do you think that anything should change about that? Or are we asking too much of drivers to not drop an F-bomb on NBC? I mean, what do you think?
Well, here's where you're crossing another evolution of you're bringing your sport up level after level, and you're expecting the drivers to come with you. Only this has been a learned process over many, many, many seasons, and it's like the sport's evolving faster than the drivers can follow or can adapt to, if that makes any sense. Okay, so now you're in a situation where that if you're going to do this, if you are going to put yourself in this situation, the networks have to understand that before all of this, and I don't know if they still do this or not, there was a delay, a small delay built in to be able to beat this stuff out. And to me, that would be the easiest thing to do, because you do stick a camera up in your face at the worst possible time and expect people to be happy about something or different about something or not project about something. And it's not going to happen in every situation because,
yeah,
like I said, I think the sport is evolving the association is evolving at a faster pace than the drivers can kind of keep up with, because they've been used to being able to talk about this up to some degree.
Yeah.
And to come in, they've not been groomed like a lot of the younger drivers maybe. And maybe you do have some younger drivers that come in that are this passionate, that were running on short tracks and places like Gresham, where you could talk about a little bit of that stuff.
See, I want to push back just a tad on that, because every driver that we see that's relevant now is a new school driver. All right, Denny Hamlin's rookie year was 2006. Kyle Busch's was 2005. That was the height of NASCAR ratings, 7 million a race, right? They
yeah,
definitely
how years,
had.
How many years have they been racing?
And yeah, but I mean, and they've been racing forever before that, right? So yeah, that's a good point. But I guess what I'm saying is that they've all been on the media leash before, so to speak. They've all been on the PR leash.
Some have been groomed. I'd say some have been groomed better than others, and some are able to adapt quicker than others to what they know they have to do. It's kind of like the PC police of everything anymore. We all have to be careful. How hard is it? It's hard, because you've been used to life a certain way your life, but now you're throwing it out to millions and millions of people.
Yeah. Well, and look,
you're going worldwide.
I think that there's something also afoot here, and that's that you talk about the evolution of NASCAR, and you know, Devin, you're 19 years old, right? I mean, our society has changed too, to be a lot more forgiving of actual, where it's less forgiving about slurs, right? I mean, there are all sorts of things you can get caught up saying you don't even realize are offensive, you know, and I'm not saying that's what Kyle Busch did. I just mean in general, there's a lot of those rules are changing. But as far as the George Carlin seven words, society has become a lot more forgiving of those. And what I've noticed, Devin, is when I watch live events, when I hear people just speak to each other, you know, when no one's watching and they're just like chilling, it's F-bomb, 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 F-bomb. I mean, there's chants about F the president, right, at sporting events. Like, and I'm talking, this isn't just the edgy people, right? It's like, it's just regular people that are doing it. So I almost, and NASCAR stopped finding drivers for it. So I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it seems like the threshold that society accepts as far as what comes out of a driver's mouth is pretty low, but it's when they start. Here's my thing. It's not just about if they're cussing or not. That's not that. It's when Denny Hamlin gets out and calls someone a hack, right? He called Alex Bowman a talentless hack. He's fuming mad. I mean, Denny Hamlin, if he had Alex Bowman in his hands, would have just beat him to a pulp if he could. He's pissed off. He's mad. Does he really actually think when the lights are off and he goes back to his bus and he, you know, has a drink, calms down, does he actually think that Alex Bowman is talentless? And what I think what happens is we hold these drivers to this is their actual thoughts when they're just super PO'd, right? Am I far off here?
No, I mean, it's just kind of in the moment, and by the time they cool down, I don't think Denny Hamlin believes that Alex Bowman's a talentless hack. It's just kind of, Denny Hamlin was probably felt that he got a little bit cheated at the end, but and even in Alex Bowman's interview on the front stretch, he even said that he got a little loose into three, and that's what caused Bowman to run into Hamlin a little bit, causing Hamlin to spin out. So I understand Hamlin's frustration, but it's when these drivers are all mad and everything, it's really all just in the moment. And then and going back on what you guys said earlier, the networks love doing this because, you know, it helps drive ratings up and it's drama.
Absolutely. So I think we hold drivers to this standard of we want conflict at races, whether it's wrecks, whether it's fights, whether it's, you know, saying nice little barbs in interviews. But it's like we want conflict so then we can admonish a driver for it. That's what I feel like. And I think if we get really down to the root of it, we want to see people misbehave so we can see if they get in trouble or not. And it's like, I think that's kind of lame. Like, don't you just want conflict for conflict and to see how it resolves itself? I don't know. And we're not going to solve that here, but I think we say, I want race, I want entertainment, I want drivers to be unfiltered. But if a driver is truly unfiltered like Denny Hamlin was, I mean, he called another driver a talentless hack, right? Kyle Busch said he wanted to beat the S out of Brad Keselowski, right? I should go do it right now, he said. Well, I mean, I'm here for it. Give me the popcorn. I'm here for it to see them mad, but I don't hold them and think rivalries. That they actually mean all of it.
Well, I think I want to see the return of actual rivalries. Like, for instance, you know, Jeff Gordon versus Dale Sr. back in the day. I mean,
a polite rivalry.
Yeah.
And they didn't hate each other. They raced each other hard with a lot of respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those do exist. I just think they're not really rivalries. It's more like, oh, that guy's good.
Yeah, it's more definitely nowadays. It's more short term. For instance, Kevin Harvick and Chase Elliott about, you know, like 2 months ago. And now that's kind of withered off.
They're still rivals, Devin. That trust me. Dan, don't you think Kevin and Chase may not be trading barbs right now, but don't you think if they get in a close racing situation, that's going to that one's still there?
I honestly don't know if it is or not. I think they've had time to cool down, but Harvick may not ever forget that he wasn't in the hunt because of that. But you look at the conflict coming out of Martinsville. You're going to have a whole new conflict order here coming out of Martinsville. So it's going to change from race to race, and we don't know how they interact outside of the racetrack. So I got no idea. And because I've seen those rivalries where I remember the one, I think it's Ricky Rudd and Brett Bodine, where every time Brett raced, Ricky Rudd came in the truck and wanted to beat his hind end. So I don't know where these things, I don't know if it comes into something that happened outside of the racetrack, inside of the racetrack, and that's for them to work out. But I just don't see a lot of things going full tilt in the next year. I really don't. Not right now, anyway.
Yeah,
I
don't think anything from like this season, because next season there's just so much unknowns for next season, especially with the next gen car. I think everything will be a fresh restart next season. So I don't know. I agree with you. I agree with you, Dan. I don't know if things are going to necessarily, in terms of like rivalries and stuff, are going to really necessarily carry over into next year.
Yeah, I disagree. I think I don't completely disagree. I just want to be clear. I think y'all are making good points. The drivers have long memories. And I don't think that Denny Hamlin versus Alex Bowman is going to last a long time based upon how Alex took Denny's comments, right? I think Alex realized he's ticked Dougie. Off.
Hey, Dougie, they've got more fragile race cars, too.
Well, that's a good point. That's a shame, too. I want to see race cars. They can go get it, all right? But, yeah, that's.
I honestly think it's like Hamlin's crew chief coming on and telling him what he did. That was smart to do that. That uh-huh. was smart. And I think that the driver's crew chief is the coach, and I think they're the one in the ear, and they're the ones that ought to help just remind them of the moment, what your goal is, where you're going, and this is big picture. And I thought when that happened, that was the smartest thing he could have done, because it probably saved, personally, Denny a lot of money.
It did, and it could have
saved
them. Don't
know about the points.
Ramifications at Phoenix too, right? I mean, if he had done something really
exactly
stupid,
right.
Yeah. I mean, they could have said, "Hey, you got to start in the back next week." Or I mean, I would hope not. But how do you punish someone if they got all the money in the world like Denny Hamlin is, right? You take it away at the racetrack. So that good thoughts there in Martinsville. By the way, in the Xfinity Series, Noah Gregson took that 9 car and put it on his back, son. He had to win, essentially, Martinsville to advance into the championship four, doing so at the expense of his teammate, Justin Allgaier, who does not advance. And Allgaier's had a solid year and is, much like Denny Hamlin, always been right there, never won that championship in the Xfinity Series. So Noah Gregson will join Daniel Hemric, Austin Cindric, and A.J. Allmendinger at Phoenix Raceway to be the Xfinity Series Championship 4. wouldn't it be rich if Daniel Hemric got his first ever NASCAR series race win in any of the three series to win the Xfinity title? That would really turn it upside down. To me, I feel like the mojo's with AJ Allmendinger, but all four of them, you can make a case. And the truck series, that race got turned upside down. Sheldon Creed, who's been solid all year, was knocked out. John Hunter Nemechek got hooked by Austin Wayne Self at Martinsville and only finished just above the cut line. But he will join Matt Crafton, who raced like a maniac as well, if you ask Shelton Creed, Ben Rhodes, and Zane Smith, who drove a hard, hard race there and had to win to advance. They'll all go to Phoenix. So Zane Smith, Noah Gragson had to win to advance, and they do so into the championship four. I got to say, the favorite there has to be John Hunter Nemechek because of what he's done all year. But give him one last restart, reset the field, and you never know. So let's look ahead to Phoenix with the Cup Championship Four, which I'll state again. Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Martin Truex Jr., and Denny Hamlin. And I want to get to our stats guru, Devin Kupka. Give me a case for whomever you think comes on top, or maybe you have a case for all four of them.
Well, I think going into this weekend, just the momentum, as I mentioned earlier, just the momentum Hendrick's on. I just can't. Are we doing picks now, or are we going to do that later?
I'm asking you right now. You got the stats, you got the knowledge, you got the passion. Let's hear it.
I just can't see anybody but Kyle Larson winning the championship right now. He's just the team is so hot, and I know Chase Elliott's his teammate, but just Kyle Larson, just over the whole field for the championship four is just, I just think he's in a league of his own at the moment. And with winning three races in a row again from the Roval to Kansas, he's pretty much won everywhere. But although I will say this about Kyle Larson, he was the only Hendrick driver this season at Phoenix to lead a lap. And he only led one lap at Phoenix earlier this season. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. It'll be interesting.
It certainly will. Look, so Truex Dan Elliott won the Martinsville spring race and has been fairly good on these type of racetracks. I believe he won Richmond, right, just several weeks ago. Denny Hamlin has, I think, that by the David Smith Motorsports Analytics, has the fastest 750 horsepower car over the course of a season and certainly knows how to get around this racetrack. That's Hamlin. You have Chase Elliott, who won this race coming from the back a year ago. And he also was extremely fast in Martinsville and probably would have won that race had he not gotten spun out by Keselowski. And then you have Kyle Larson, as Devin said, who is the fastest car for the whole season. 9 wins to his credit, has done it on every kind of track, and was fast at Phoenix in the spring. So, Dan, you have, I know, been a steadfast believer in the Hendrick mojo all season long. Where do you stand now as we go to Phoenix? I think I know.
Yeah, I think, you know, right now I stand because I look at my list of pluses and minuses of the drivers, and I try to rate them not only during the year, but also previous years, which we don't have a lot for Larson to be graded on that, but I still hold him very, very high in this. I look at Chase first because he's felt the pressure of winning a championship, of knowing, even though he hasn't won as many races as Kyle Larson, I still put him just a tick above Kyle Larson. I don't take anything away from Larson, and I think he is almost equally as well. If he notches a championship, that's going to help him in the next seasons to be able to put that together with repeating. And I think that's the key to this, is repeating. And if you've been through one and known the pressure and know that you've succeeded and can do it, I feel like you have an advantage. And then I look at where Hamlin and Truex have been all season long. And that one was a little bit more difficult because you are looking at not only the drivers, but also the organization. And I think that when you grade by marks there, that organization is down just a tick. You may not think so, but I feel like they're down just a tick. And I feel like this has not been exactly Truex's year. And
yeah.
I feel like Hamlin has more confidence than Truex does, even though Truex had a good run on Sunday. He really did. But
he managed to race into the playoffs ahead of Kyle Busch. I mean, Kyle Busch was the first driver out, Dan, to your point. I don't want to take over here, but he did. He managed to do that with damage on both sides of his race car. He just, like I just said about Gregson a moment ago, he put that car on his back, son. He put that car on his back and just, they call it Martinsville for a reason, right? And they named it after him, didn't they? It wasn't, no, maybe not. But Martinsville has been his playground, and he certainly willed himself into those playoffs there, to your point.
But we're going to Phoenix. Okay.
But so we're going to Phoenix. Where do you want in the spring?
Yeah. Where do you want in the spring? I just feel like it's going to be the Hendrick cars versus the Gibbs cars, and I felt this way since midseason, and I'll leave it where it's at. Kyle Larson, he'll run good if he doesn't beat himself. If there's something
right
that he does, yep, that I feel like Chase has a better advantage on that end, but those two cars, I feel like, definitely the ones to beat.
Yeah.
And then Hamlin and Truex, I put a little bit more emphasis on Hamlin. I don't know what this past weekend is going to do for him, because when you get shaken up in this deal, when you have a race turn out like it did, and this is where the racing gods kind of favor one side or another right now, and you've got to look at where the racing gods are today. And I just don't see it with those two drivers. And it may turn around and be that way, but that's what I'm going to do right there.
I got you. So I think one thing that we need to talk about with Elliott and the 19 is that pit crew won. I mean, they were the fastest pit crew, and they got the big bonus there in the All-Star race. And then it was like the very next race, they had a loose wheel. Right. And they got the penalty after the race, the big time penalty for the wheel coming off or the multiple loose lug nuts, whatever it was. Right. And Larson's team, I just noticed, even just in Martinsville. And yeah, by the way, Larson sped twice on pit road at Martinsville, and he did at Martinsville at Phoenix back in the spring, too. But Larson's number five crew is lightning quick. And that's not to say that the 19 crew and the 11 are not, and the 9 are not either. But that team overall in all phases is firing on all cylinders. And because of the virtue of everything, I mean, there's going to be qualifying this weekend in practice. And I have a feeling that they are got to be the favorites to get the pole also. When's the last time we even talked about qualifying, boys? It's been a minute. So, but there will be qualifying in practice this weekend.
Let's go back and regroup here and say then Kyle Busch will have the pole among the non-participants in the playoff. Okay, so since Kyle Busch gets to practice and qualify, let's see how that changes his game.
I think absolutely. Hey, do you boys get sentimental at all about there being a change of era for the race car? And it's not just that we're going from Gen 6 to Gen 7. It's that the whole idea of the car being built by the race team is completely evolving now to a vendor-based situation. And we're going to see the last 750 horsepower race cars. Next year, that package will be about 670 or so. We're going to see the last 5 lug nut pit stops. I mean, again, I know that's not something that's super sexy. The exhaust on the new race car, the next-gen car, is going to be completely different. It's going to sound different. In some ways, more guttural, I guess, but and it's just going to be totally different. Dan, as a mechanic, is there any sentimentality at all that we should be having or that you have?
No, because look at what's coming after this. Have you thought about what's coming after this with the fact that you
electric?
Could have a hybrid?
Yes.
Yeah, where you have a hybrid and what's coming. I just think that everything is evolving so quickly, and I struggle at times to keep up with technology on where technology is today, and that's why I love to go on to different websites and look at the different things and see what all is new and what's not, because this I think this better prepares you for what's going on around you, because things are changing now at lightning speed. The pace is unbelievable.
It really is.
It's like Iacocca said, lead, follow, or get out of the way. Okay, so now you're beginning to see what he really meant. And that was probably, gosh, that had to be probably 60 years ago.
Well, think how much stuff changing was back then in 1961. My gosh, the country with their huge change in general. Devin, you're 19 years old. You were, gosh, 2007.
Still wet behind the ears.
Devin was a child when the Car of Tomorrow came out, which was this radical change for the Gen 5 Twisted.
I've been sitting here trying to figure out who he sounds like. Do you know who he sounds like?
Who does Devin Kupka sound like? Does he sound like a Gen 5 race car engine?
Nope, he does not. He sounds like, and don't hold this against me, but he sounds like a young Jeff Gordon.
Oh, what do you think, Devin? Is that all right?
Hey, being compared to Jeff Gordon, I'll take it any day.
I love it. That's a great point. Yeah, Jeff had got that unassuming voice. And yeah. Yep. And now, Dev, what you need to do is grow that pencil mustache and the mullet, and you'll be set, brother.
Earlier in the year, I used to have a mullet, so maybe I'll have to do that again.
Halloween,
you're about to go back into the archives and get some pictures.
Yeah, okay. You better send us some pictures there. Put it on our Five to Go Racing Facebook page. All right, look, Devin, you used to have. So we got to do the mullet, the pencil mustache, the big Oakleys that were big popular in the early 90s. It looked like ski mask glasses or whatever you call those. Man, you'll be set, bro. Get a rainbow jacket. I'm telling you, you're going to go into big things. So,
and when you get to be a famous announcer, just remember me.
Okay, I definitely will.
Oh, I love that. You're on the track, bro. You're on the track. You're hungry. You've been to more races than Dan and I combined this year, so you're definitely on track for it. Hey, let's talk about Devin. You were a kid, 2007, 14 years ago. I mean, you were a little kid. Do you even remember cars before the Car Tomorrow?
I used to have some of the diecasts, some of like the Gen 4 diecasts. So, and I remember as a kid, because I wasn't really into NASCAR when I was younger, but I remember I kind of liked the look of the Car of Tomorrow better than the Gen 4. But
really,
that's rare. But I like the wing look on the car. It just made it look, wow, you know, mean and fast, but. But
see, most people don't think that. But what I've noticed, Devin, is from your generation, just stuff I've read, that Gen Z has a nostalgic feel for the Car Tomorrow, because that's what they grew up on. And they actually like the look of it. The first thing that NASCAR did when they changed it was got rid of the bat wing on the back. And that you're saying that's what you like the most.
Yeah, that's
actually what I like the most. And when they had a couple of the auctions in Charlotte, I bought a couple of the wings because I love them so much.
We go through 45 minutes of this podcast and you blow my mind with that. This is interesting. I mean, that is cool. Hey, the splitters had to go though. Those were terrible. They still are. But yeah, that's you like the splitters too, Devin? The splitters of those braces that look like dentures on the front of the car there?
Not as much.
Well, we're moving from that chassis. Go ahead, Dan.
I only love them on the Hellcat Red Eyes.
Those never made it to the Cup Series, right? Well, we're moving from that chassis, though, to something totally new. So it's the end of an era there. A couple of other driver and team situations that into the era of, we've kind of already mentioned, but Chip Ganassi Racing, they spent 21 years in the Cup Series. They will still be involved in other motorsports. That becomes Trackhouse Racing, essentially gobbles that up in the future there. So Kurt Busch is going to a new team. He was in the one car for three seasons. Ryan Newman's been in the six car for three seasons. Probably not going to be a full-time Cup driver next year. Highly, highly unlikely. And same with Matt DiBenedetto in his two seasons in the 21 car. Then you also have, and this to me is the biggest transition, you got Brad Keselowski leaving Team Penske after 12 years. I think that's big. He was there since the end of the 2009 season, so 12 plus years. You also have Todd Gordon retiring as a crew chief. That's sort of been a little under the radar thing that's not been highly talked. I mean, it's been talked about, but it just doesn't stick out as much. And there's some more interactions as well. Some other drivers like Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill moving up out of the truck series to join Richard Childress Racing and, you know, a few others. This is that time of year, boys, where no matter what, it's the end of an era for someone. And certainly there are a lot of drivers or a lot of team members that are going to lose their jobs or have to change jobs because of how the construction of the cars is changing. So let's, when we get all talking about this championship, let's not forget what's on the line for almost everybody in that garage, Dan. And I don't think, Dan, since your days being at the final race of the year at Atlanta Motor Speedway, has that changed?
No, it really hadn't. And, you know, you've got to feel, because not only is there pressure at the top of the list, but the pressure also extends now to the bottom of the list. So you just have so many situations that you can find yourself in so quickly that you really have trouble. You need a scorecard to keep up.
For sure. Devin, is there anything on the sentimental side that you look forward to, or not only look forward to, but that you circle as the biggest end of an era that you're watching? You know, and you being younger, some of this stuff may not be as big of a deal, or maybe there's stuff that's a bigger deal. I don't know.
Well, with this current generation of car, the Gen 6, so I really got into NASCAR back in 2017. So this is the generation of car that I got into the sport with. So and this is what I've pretty much grown up with, is this generation of car. So it'll be kind of sad to see it go, but I'm excited to see what the next gen car is going to bring us next year. So I'm excited to see that for next year.
And those will be first on the track and really racing action, as we talked about in our pre-show production meeting at Bowman Gray Stadium, LA Coliseum, early next February. They had a Bowman Gray test, Devin. I know you were following that with Clint Bowyer, Jeff Gordon, and Tony Stewart there. Did you have any thoughts about the little breadcrumbs they shared out of the ancient Winston-Salem racetrack there?
I thought it was interesting, some of what the drivers were saying about how I think they mentioned something about grip on the going into the turns. I think that was interesting. And just how the overall the car kind of felt and all that. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens at the Los Angeles Coliseum next year for the Clash.
Right, and there are going to be several more tests strewn throughout the year. You can look up, anybody listening, you can look up when those are. But several tests strewn out through the rest of this calendar year, including at Atlanta Motor Speedway, that they are well into the repave on now. They've laid the new asphalt down, or are laying sections of it down as we speak, for the 4 degrees of banking added to each turn at AMS there. And the transitions coming into out of the corners is going to be a little bit different too. So there's going to be a lot more next gen testing with a lot more cars than just two or three at a time. And that's going to be certainly, they've still got a lot to work on, Dan, with the heat inside the race cars. They've changed some stuff with safety modifications to make the car a little more flexible based on the Talladega crash test, the really dubious test that people didn't really want to talk about or didn't know much about. Have you heard anything just through the industry, Dan, of some anxieties or worries? We talked about them a lot on this podcast, and I know you talked to a lot of people, Dan.
Yep, I had seen Ken Reagan when he was here for our Moonshine Festival, and we talked a little bit about that, and there wasn't really a lot that was talked about other than what we already know. And the thing about it is when you get down and you start running these cars, you're going to find little intricacies that you've missed or things that you need to do. And it'll work itself out as the season progresses. But there was nothing in the conversation that I felt like would be, you know, kind of like when fuel injection came in to NASCAR and a lot of people anticipated a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And I said from the beginning that it wouldn't be near as detrimental, or there would be fewer problems than anybody thought about. And they really had it worked out, because we've still got November, December, January, you got 3 more months left to go. So a lot can be done in those 3 months, and I think it will. And I think they'll come out of the box swinging, because they already have a standard pretty much to go by anyway, with that being the supercar or the V8 supercar, whatever. And I think that you already have an idea of what that car is capable of, what it's going to do. It's just you've got a different set of drivers.
Right, and that certainly that the ground will keep getting tilled. We don't have as many drivers leaving or even entering the Cup Series next year as we've had that the sort of egress and ingress that's gone on the last couple of years. But with the new car now, that's going to be an X factor and very likely could benefit the younger drivers there, as we've seen the frustrations Kyle Busch has had in the last couple of years. Joey Logano's been really off, or just the 22 team has the last couple of seasons too. I mean, he's only got one win. Brad Keselowski needs some rejuvenation there after a good year last year. So I wonder how this the X factor, the new car, changes things. And does the Fords overall really struggled, right, with horsepower and with the aerodynamic changes, particularly at Stewart Haas? You know, does the next gen car shake that up? I mean, who's the first one to take off and get good with the next gen, right?
You've got to ask yourself, is this going to level the playing field among manufacturers, or is it going to make it worse? I think it will, to some degree, I think it will help. I don't know what the engine packages are going to finalize being, and if they've already finalized a lot of that. I'm sure that they know a lot more than I do. I know.
Yeah.
And I think that all of this will work itself out, but I wonder how much they will have to tweak a little bit on the nose of the car, or engine tweaking a little bit, you know, to give one or another, to where everybody, they're trying to get everybody on the same playing field, and that's virtually impossible to do.
I think they're good-looking race cars, but let's see what they do on the track. And I sure hope that organizationally, there's always going to be a difference in money in the teams, but the top flight teams, I hope that the top flight Fords are not so far behind the top flight Chevys or Toyotas as they were this year. It seemed like Chevy had the advantage. One last thing I want to bring in before we take five to go, episode 155 into the garage, boys. Devin, I want to ask you, you just happened to buy tickets and be right next to the spot where I was standing when I was able to call, be part of the team of turn announcers at the Charlotte Roval. And you had a gentleman there with you who was at his first ever NASCAR race. What was that like for him, and what was it like for you bringing someone to their first race, and do you think he's coming back? Tell me his name again, and just break that down for me.
His name was Tanaka, and earlier this year, me and some of my friends, we went to Taco Mac, and we watched the Coke Zero Sugar 400 from Daytona from Taco Mac, and I just wanted to expose them to NASCAR a little bit. Some of them have seen it, but I know Tanaka for a fact hasn't seen it, and he was telling me, like, oh, how cool it was. And then I was thinking, looking at the schedule, because this year I was trying to go to as many races as I could, and I accomplished that this year. And the Charlotte Roval came up, and then I was asking some friends, and they couldn't go. And I was like, you know what, let me take Tanaka to a race, see how he'll like it. And I took him to the race, and he actually really enjoyed it. He had a really good time.
He's decked out in Bubba Wallace gear, and I know Tanaka is African American and Japanese American too. Isn't that part of his lineage, right?
He just got here from Zimbabwe about 2 years ago. I know his name is sounds like it comes from Japan, but he's from Zimbabwe. But anyways,
I'm sorry. I knew he was an immigrant. I was just trying to remember what. I thought there was some tie-in with why his name was Tanaka too, like a Japanese. I forget. I guess I was totally wrong. I made that up. But he's here from Zimbabwe not long ago, right? And he goes to his first race. He's decked out. He got some Bubba Wallace gear, right? And
yeah.
I mean, what were his thoughts besides just, oh, this is cool? I mean, yeah.
Well, funny. One funny thing is that he was watching Bubba Wallace all day, and then I think he mentioned it to you at the end of the race. He actually switched drivers. He actually works at a McDonald's. He actually works at McDonald's. So I was like, oh, why don't you root for Bubba Wallace? He's sponsored by Ross Chastain. They're sponsored by McDonald's. But now he just kept talking to me about how William Byron and all that, and how he performed a lot better on the track that day than Wallace did. Every time I've shown him NASCAR, he's always like, oh, I got to start watching week to week now. So I think I definitely plan on taking him to the track again next year. So I think if we want get him watching every week, I think he'd get into it.
I think that he's very lucky to have you as a friend there to shepherd him through, because it could be overwhelming for somebody. So thank you for doing that and spread the good NASCAR news. And I think, Dan, we need to adjust our expectations. Go ahead, Dan.
That's a great partnership. He can bring the burgers. You can buy the tickets.
Yeah, Devin, there you go.
Yes, so actually this season I took a couple people to their first races this season. I think I took about four people to their first races this season, so I'm getting new fans involved in the sport.
That's awesome, man. That is so cool. I love getting to take people if it's not their first race, like Devin, like you and I have gotten to do before on the media side, it'd be up close and not only in the stands too, but people see that for the first time and they could be standing in the garage right next to a race car. That changes people, sometimes gets the flutter going in the heart a little bit too. So we've all gotten to experience it that first time at a racetrack, and it's pretty awesome there.
So. Yeah, well, if you're fluttering, we need to check the jets and your carburetor.
You would know about the heart flutters and need me making sure that gets a check. So, you know, yep. You would definitely know about that. Well, boys, before we get going, any parting shots there? And Dan, I'll slide it to you first here as we get ready for the championships.
No, I'm just so excited getting ready for this championship because Martinsville turned out to me as good as expectation did on what I thought the race should be and ended up being. Whether or not people agree or not, that's up to you. But I really did enjoy that, and I'm looking forward to Phoenix and seeing how this shakes out and see if my predictions hold water.
Hey, I think that it certainly has a high chance of doing so. And before we get to Devin's last parting shot there, and Devin, let's give you time to think about it. Dan, you shared with me an interesting stat about the NHRA this past weekend. I know Steve Torrence went to Victory Lane at Top Fuel and has dominated there this season, but there was a milestone for that whole set of series.
Yep, 1,000 NHRA national events from, I think, 1955 to now.
Wow.
And it was an exciting weekend. I watched the drag races too, and I really thought there was some kind of competition, that there was some kind of something going on with Pro Stock between Keith Black and Elite, who are the two premier engine builders for that class. And they had devised something to come up with so that they could manipulate the runs, and I don't know how that turned out. I've got to read a little bit more about that, but I don't know that it turned out like they wanted it to, but I thought that was interesting that they really did even say anything about it, and that I don't know if NHRA will do anything or not. I don't know if they'll come in and do anything or not, but it was just a great weekend, and it being the 1,000th race was pretty exciting, and it being Vegas and all, it was just a great day for NASCAR, great day for drag racing, and the events were good both places, Martinsville and Vegas.
Absolutely. Well, really glad they've had a successful season there, and I know Torrance has been dominating there in NHRA. So I don't follow it closely there, but I do respect what they do. Devin, any parting shots for you as we get ready to go?
Yes, I actually forgot to bring up this one stat, and it's about for this championship weekend at Phoenix.
Please.
So with the current configuration of Phoenix, which was started in fall of 2018, so we've run six races on the current configuration at Phoenix. Four of those races have been won by Joe Gibbs drivers, and two of them have been won by Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr.
That's a great stat. That is a great stat to remember. Joe Gibbs has been on fire at Phoenix Raceway, and it used to be Harvick's place of dominance there, and really since the configuration change, it's been a JGR show. So will it be the dominant team through the whole season, or the one that has the history at this racetrack? We'll cover that right here, get your thoughts as well at 5 to go. So be sure to go to our Facebook page, 5 to go racing, and leave some comments there. I'm the one that manages that. I'll try to interact with you. We post our new episodes there. You can hit me on Twitter at Doug Turnbull, or find me on Instagram or Facebook too, but Twitter's the most up to the minute, right? That's where I check the most. Devin, I know you're on social media a little bit. Where do you want people to hit you up if they want to talk racing with you?
Hit me up on Twitter at Devin-Kupka, and that's Kupka with a K.
Not Cup Car, because that's what we're watching this week. K-U-P-K-A.
Yeah.
Kupka.
I might have to change it. I might have to change it to Cup Car. Just add an R at the end of my last name.
No, I love that. I love that. And Dan, you don't have social media, right? So just people are going to need to find you how they find you, okay?
Yeah, exactly right. Because no, I am playing around here with a podcast I want to do, and we'll talk a little bit about it when I finalize a little bit on where I want to go with it and what I want to do. But you and I have talked briefly about that, and it is not a racing podcast, but definitely I would call it a life podcast.
Yeah, and I look forward to helping you with that, Dan. That's going to be a real cool thing. So stay tuned for that in off season. We're going to have some more here on Five to Go as well. I've got a special surprise delivery here, boys. Eric Von Hessler is calling me, I'm sure, because stuff went late over at the station. But Eric, I got you on the speakerphone with Dan Elliott and Devin Kupka here as we're recording the last throws of episode 155, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and I apologize. I got caught up in meetings, and I lost where I was in time. And I apologize to everyone that I did not make the podcast. My apologies. So there
all
you
good.
Have it.
All good. All good.
All good.
Hey, Eric, just one thing said, just to do business here. Do you have a pick on Sunday out of Denny Hamlin, out of Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr.? Who's going to take home the Cup Series Cup on Sunday?
Well, since we have Uncle Dan here, I'm going to root for Chase Elliott. But I'm going to assume that the five team got their bad race out of the way. And so if you're asking me if I put money down on it, I got to put my money down on Larson just because that team has been able to step up when needed, usually. But you know what? The thing with this format is it could be anybody, right? I mean, you could blow a tire on the first lap. I mean, your strategy goes out the window, right? So,
yeah.
I'm feeling, or am I wrong? I needed to ask you about this because sometimes I don't know what I'm talking about. Do they go in even to the last race?
Yeah, it's just the highest finisher. So Kyle Larson finishes 17th and the others finish behind him. He's the champion. That's, yeah.
I'm going all over the place. I'm saying I'm rooting for Chase. I'm putting my money on Kyle Larson, and I wouldn't be surprised if any of them won. But I do, you know what they should do? And you can tell me if I'm wrong here, if they already do it. Do those four start at the front?
No, there's actually qualifying through the whole field. They'll actually do practice and qualifying this weekend. So
that's a change. That should be made. If these four are going to go into
Kyle
this
Busch
race,
is going to be on
and
the
that's
pole.
What it's all about. And obviously anybody can win, and we all understand that. And we've been doing these races without qualifying a bunch. I think that in the last race, the proper way to do it is based on whatever their standings were coming into it, but you don't apply. At that point, it's still 0-0-0-0 going in. But I would start them in the first two rows, all four of them. I think it'd be more exciting. They should make that change in the future.
That's interesting. Yeah, Chase Elliott had to start in the back on an inspection failure last year. So Dan says he predicts Kyle Busch is going to win the pole, by the way. I don't know if you heard him there. So, yeah, we'll be all over the place. And who knows, maybe Alex Bowman just goes and wins it all. He is very good at Phoenix. So
I don't know. Jenny Hamlin says he's not a very good driver. I don't know.
Yeah. And by the way, Alex Bowman has twice as many wins in 2021 as Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin, or another way to put it, add Elliott and Hamlin's win totals together, and you get Bowman's, for what it's worth, this year.
Next week I will make the podcast, I promise. And I want to revisit Denny Hamlin's comments, because I think there's something a little bit deeper going on there.
Absolutely.
But, we'll do that later. My apologies again. Good luck to the Elliott family, and have great racing, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, appreciate you, Eric. Thank you for joining in. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in to 5-2-Go. We'll be back next week after Phoenix and kind of shape things up for the offseason there. God bless, and have a great weekend, and go Braves.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.